Hello, friends. Hi. Welcome to the first of our open webinars, which are basically discussion sessions, question and answer sessions on the any subjects of the Ageless Wisdom. At least we can propose our thoughts. And if I cannot offer a useful suggestion, I have some colleagues who may be able to help me. I'm very happy here to welcome. So far there are four staff members and 16 of us from the great beyond. I'd like to welcome Brennan and Constance and Paul and Derwin and Elena and Inta and Janet, Laura, Linda, Louise, Maribel, Malia, Monica, Reynaldo, Tiago, Victor, and Walter. Welcome to our discussion. It's a little bit spontaneous. We don't really know where this will go. It's just the kind of thing where if you have an area of interest and it relates to the field of spirituality, to the field of esotericism and the trans-Himalayan wisdom, then it's open field for those kinds of questions. What you can do is you can raise your hand. There's a little hand there. I hope you can all see that. And when we see your hand, we'll call on you. It's best not to leave everybody open, the open mic, because some people have headsets like this and some people don't. We get echoes, we get sound, all kinds of things like that. So it's best to have basically one person questioning at a time. Or if you have a question that you want to write out, then one of my colleagues will let me know that you've done that. I want to say that, you know, we are living in a period of what is called one of the rare periods of radiation, when the inner spiritual nature of the human being can take a great step forward. One of these periods of radiation existed at the time of the Buddha, and he taught quite a number of arhats, fourth degree initiates and third degree initiates, and also the more regular disciple who had not attained that much. It was a important period of radiation for producing accepted discipleship, an understanding of what that meant, and the light of wisdom and the Four Noble Truths and the Noble Eightfold Path emerged from this, and light was thrown upon the path by that great second-ray soul, third-ray monad, who was the Buddha, overshadowing, I believe, the Prince Gautama, just as the Lord Maitreya overshadowed the Master Jesus. Then around the time of the Christ was another period of radiation. These periods of radiation are what I call ingathering, because the ashrams are becoming very magnetic, and we are supposed to open the door, attract those who are capable towards the ashram, because we're living in an intensive period of spiritual training. So at the time of the Christ, there was another and lesser period of radiation. But it was strong enough to really start a current in the Western world, and the theme was love and the movement towards initiation. Now, at this time, we are living in the greatest period of radiation. The new group of world servers is involved. Humanity has become a disciple and is reversing the wheel and is preparing for the first initiation, for the birth of the Christ consciousness within the heart. And this is perhaps the greatest period of ingathering that we have experienced thus far. And so our approach to the spiritual hierarchy of the planet and in service to humanity can be very intense and rapid if we take advantage of our opportunity, if we seize the day, so to speak. And all of us who have a real interest in the Ageless Wisdom are part of this ingathering, because we need to train our consciousness so that it can see into the world in such a way that the the truths of creation and of life and of process on our planet are actually revealed. There are so many, illusory methods of thought, so many glamorous perceptions. The world is racked by division and separation based on human ignorance, an ignorance which does not see the truth. Now, in the ageless wisdom, well, you know, who has a monopoly on the truth? No one, of course, but in the ageless wisdom, we are presented with a view of life which goes far deeper than most of those views that are dividing humanity at this time. So if we can train ourselves in the ageless wisdom, we will be doing an important thing for humanity, because then we'll be in a position to carry the light to others. And humanity needs light now as it has never before, because it's in the middle of a very promising and yet dangerous transition into the age of Aquarius during the next 100 years or so. So here we are together. We are inquiring the way. We are asking each other, and we are asking our own inner self, our own inner soul, for the answers to our deepest questions. And we are attempting to obey the inner impulses of our soul. That's the second requirement. We are attempting to seek our own guidance, and even if the most worldly acclaimed individual advises us, and yet it is not on a spiritual line, we have to reject such worldly advice, even though it is very well accepted in the world. And finally, the fourth factor for us, as we find in the Tibetan's treatise on white magic, is to set an example. Well, I'm sure we've all set some examples we wish we hadn't set, but we wake up one day and we realize that according to how we live, so other people will see us, will judge us, and will determine whether they should follow the spiritual path, because we ourselves may be exemplars of that path. So inquire the way, obey the inner impulses of the soul, which we are authentically, that's really what we are. Pay no attention to the worldly wisdom, which leads towards the materialistic perspective. And finally, set an example. So that's just a little introduction. I'm very happy that you've been able to join us. Some of you are students in the Moria Federation. This is the first really open webinar that I've given. The other webinars of this nature have been for the students of the Moria Federation alone, and those kinds of webinars are continuing, but I realized somehow that we have these full moon meditations open to everyone. Everyone who's on our lists and may be interested in the ageless wisdom, everyone's invited. And I thought, well, why not have some discussion sessions, some question and answer sessions, which pertain directly to everybody who may be interested, without the limitation that you must join the Moria Federation. You know, we're very happy to have you apply to the Moria Federation, and we do have an opportunity at this time because we have something we call Preparing for the Great Quest. And before we actually start our program, every Capricorn solstice, we have this area where you can test the waters, so to speak, and you can correspond with a mentor and develop your thought with a student, a teacher who will help you and correspond with you in hopefully an illuminating way, and then you can decide whether you want to go on to enter into our 7-year program, which I'm trying somehow to make 9 years if I possibly can do it, but right now it's just 7 years. So you can test the waters in the Preparing for the Great Quest if you like. So, all right, look, I see a hand up, and this is Malia, and Malia, hi, and can you hear me?
I certainly can, Michael, and I gather by the blip that you can hear me.
Yes, we hear you. I hear you quite well, so just please go ahead, and you've been in the field a long time. What's on your mind?
Well, in your most recent post on Esoteric Astrology Adventures, you made the comment that man's mind is stunned when he tries to consider the aggregation of impelling energies. And my mind goes stunned every time the subject of the reversed wheel comes up.
Uh-huh. The reverse wheel,
So
yes.
I'm wondering if you could tell me, what why, how, where, and when the wheel reverses.
What does it mean? What does it mean?
What does it mean?
It's kind of an enigma. You know, it's not that the zodiac begins to turn backward. We're told by Master DK that esoteric astrology tells us that most human beings are actually traveling along the zodiac in a clockwise manner, in a reverse manner, moving from Aries to Pisces to Aquarius to Capricorn. And that when we begin to detect that there is a higher of the pairs of opposites within our nature, a higher power, whatever we want to call it, a soul, something spiritual, we reverse our direction on that wheel and begin to travel in the normal way that astrology usually considers as the sequence of the signs of the zodiac, namely Aries, Taurus, Gemini, and so forth. But we know that we don't live lives that are sequential, like now I'm going to live a life in Pisces, my next sun sign will be Aquarius, my next sun sign. It just doesn't work out that way. So what's the reversal all about? It has to do with a reversal of energy currents within the etheric body. They go in a different direction depending on whether you are truly an aspirant and a disciple or whether you're just living the normal personality life. If you're living the normal personality life, the high energies come in, they touch the higher centers and go right down below the diaphragm where they feed the personality life, and there they stay. That's the ordinary wheel. But if we are on the reverse wheel, the current of the etheric energies will enter from below or enter from above, go to below, and then be raised up into the higher chakras, which they will stimulate. And so, in a way, we have reversed the etheric currents and are no longer feeding the chakras below the diaphragm. We are beginning to raise them and feed the chakras above the diaphragm, which opens up our consciousness to soul living. I believe it is a metaphor, in a way, for the currents in the etheric body. Now, when does it occur? I believe it occurs, okay, this is my thought here. I've got all this astrological stuff here, but there's more than astrology to all this. Let's see. All I have to do is find my cursor, and all is well. Here is a picture of the egoic lotus as conceptualized. This one, my wife, Tuya, drew one that's rather better, but I can't access it at the moment. This one was drawn by my colleague Keith Bailey, and it's based upon the Tibetan's drawing. And when the fifth petal of the egoic lotus in the love tier of petals begins to open on the higher mental plane, that is the time when the reversal of the wheel is first beginning. It doesn't happen all at once. What it means is the energy currents are flowing in two directions simultaneously. There's the backward drag, and some of the energy is being drawn down into the lower subdiaphragmatic centers, solar plexus, sacral, base of the spine, spleen, and some of the energy is attempting to rise, and we have cross currents going on for a long time. But finally, at the time between the second initiation and the third initiation, comes a sure reversal of the wheel. From that time on, the upward pull of the energy gains the greater momentum. There's no longer such a conflict between the energies, and we are well on our way to the Sirian method of initiation, which really begins, in a sense, at the third degree. And from that time on, the wheel can be considered to be reversed. There's no more downward drag. It's only an upward draft, if you will. So that's sort of the psycho-spiritual way I have interpreted this reversal of the wheel, and later when we can do some analysis of reincarnational cycles, we will see the signs in which and under which a person is born, with the sun sign in a certain place, the rising sign in a certain place, and then we'll be able to have a science about all this. But right now, I think that the explanation I've given is the one that I use, at least.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well then, if that's the case, and that makes sense to me, how come we're using the counterclockwise chart when we do astrology charts?
A counterclockwise is the correct way. In other words, most of the people, counterclockwise is Aries, Taurus, Gemini, etc. Clockwise is the reversed way, or not the reverse way, clockwise is the backwards way in the zodiac. So most of us who are in this field are people who have been aspiring for some time, and we have recognized there is a higher power, there is a soul, there is a spiritual aspect, the higher of the pairs of opposites, and we can begin to travel with the currents rising into our higher centers rather than just grounding in the lower ones. So we're using the right wheel. However, there's a lot of people out there who are doing astrology who are just in the personality life, and in a way, they're not using the right wheel. Nevertheless, we can interpret, here's what we can do. We can take the energies of their particular signs and interpret them in a subdiaphragmatic way, as if they're occurring below the diaphragm, and help them raise them up. So it's just a convention which way we look at the wheel, but for the aspiring person, we're looking at it in the right way.
Thank you, Michael. That helps a lot.
You bet. Good, good, Malia. You know, yeah, thank you. Thank you very much. Okay, thank you. All right, let's see. I have here, let's see, wait a second. I'm just looking. I had two people up, and one was Reynaldo, if he pressed that correctly. Let's see. Reynaldo, did you have your hand up?
The other one.
Yes, sir.
Hello.
Yes, sir. Yes.
Okay, I'll try to hear you the best I can.
Okay.
What was on your mind?
First, I'd like to make a question about the book Esoteric Healing.
Yes.
In the page 705, there are the seven healing techniques.
Yes.
Which the Tibetan told that a disciple in the beginning of the next century, 21st, would explain the questions. Would you please explain these techniques for us, or at least the basics of them?
That's a very, very big question. You know, it takes a course on esoteric healing to really get into that. Here we are. Page 706, and he gives us a little bit of an explanation here. I think, of course, we do have someone in our group right here who may do a little better at this than I do, but I've been studying these techniques even though healing is not my particular area, and I would say that, interestingly enough, DK does not give us the entire explanation for any one of the techniques because he wants our intuition to work. When I study the first two techniques, what I understand is that the power of the monad is actually being invoked in these techniques, and one has to be well schooled in some of the basic radiatory work before this kind of work can occur. Kay, what I'm going to do is call on you in just a minute for a little bit of elaboration on this. Not, you know, you don't have to go through the whole thing, of course. But this is all about monadic healing. And it works, the highest then awakens within the one who knows and within the one who must be healed. And then the two are one. This is mystery deep. So it is actually a monadic source which is invoked here. Now, every one of these could be analyzed line by line, and in a sense, I hope to do that in the future. Right now, I'm working on astrology, but there are many enigmas that go on here. For instance, when he starts talking, well, you know, this would take hours, okay? This would take hours to go into, but he uses numbers, and he says it starts from Shambhala with the first ray, and we call on the hearts of all those within Shambhala to send the dynamic force forth, and let it descend into the third, fifth, and the seventh. And he says, these words mean not what doth at sight appear. Do they mean the chakras, or do they mean the seven principles? And for my thought at the moment, I'm thinking they relate to the actual seven principles and their vehicles. One could spend an hour on each one of these techniques. I'm going to go here to technique number two. And this is the one which may relate to us the most, because many of us are on the second ray, either in our soul or in our monad. So again, there is the enigma of what the numbers mean. Let that magnetic living force withdraw and supplement that which is present in the seventh, which I assume to be the etheric vehicle, opposing four and six, which I assume to be the buddhic and the astral planes, to three and seven, which I presume to be the atmic and the etheric planes. In other words, he's dividing the rays between them, but dealing not with the mind, which is the five, which can interfere very much with the healing process if it becomes too, you know, analytical. And then there is a descent of the circular inclusive vortex to a point in the etheric body where the congestion occurs, and it disturbs the congestion, draws off the energy, and supplies new and fresh energy. Now, to me, the greatest of these of the statements here involves the heart. The heart revolves, so that's the heart. In other words, love is the great healing force. Rays 2 and 7 are the great healers. The heart revolves. Two hearts revolve as one. Okay, the 12-petaled heart center within the vehicle, between the shoulder blades, the 12 within the head, or the heart in the head, and the 12 upon the plane of soul endeavor. What does that mean? That is the egoic lotus, which we've just been looking at. That's another 12. And just to substantiate my point that this is monadic, I'll go a little bit further, and they cooperate as one, and thus the work is done. So the heart centers are the lines of transmission by which the descent occurs. Two energies achieve this consummation, and I believe when he refers to two energies, it's mostly monadic and soul energy, interestingly. And the three, whose number is a 12, that is the heart center between the shoulder blades, the heart center in the head, and the 12 petaled egoic lotus, the three whose number is a 12 respond to the greater 12. And that, to me, is in the monadic vehicle. There's a 12-ness in the monadic vehicle, and it is the life aspect, and it's related to Pisces, whose number is a 12. And the great love energy of the monad descends through all of these 12s. And then the hint, the life is known. And it's the monadic factor we're dealing with, and the years prolong. Now, we could go through all of them, you know, like I say, it's a course to do this, and any one of these should take an hour or more of discussion. But in a way, we're getting a little ahead of ourselves here, because he put that at the back of the book. Now, there's another, Kay, where is the healing protocol? Do you know what page that is on?
No.
I was asking my colleague.
103. 105.
Okay, here we go. So Rinaldo, look.
Around 103, 105.
Right here. Here is the preliminary rules for radiatory healing. Kay, would you like to say anything about that particular protocol, just a little bit about it?
DK says it's the safest protocol to use. He advises that we start using these in group formation because it's safer for us and safer for the patient as well.
This is radiatory, isn't it, Kay?
It's
this protocol.
Simple.
This is radiatory healing.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yes.
So not yet the magnetic healing, correct? Because it cures disease or increases the evil state, right? Mm-hmm. So, see, here's the thing. You know, in a way,
yes.
Rinaldo, if we try to read the end of the book before we read the beginning, well, I'm not saying you're doing that, okay? But you're looking at the most advanced techniques, okay? So he gives us all kinds of things we can do as we work our way up to those techniques that require intuitive response. Now, I could go through with you every one of those, but what I think should be done is that we have this course on esoteric healing in the Moria Federation, which begins after 3 years. Kay is a part of that, and Nicole Reshiniti, and who else, Kay, is involved in administrating that course?
Eva and Jeremy and Michael, that course is, as you say, in year three, because the basic courses on esoteric psychology, and the rays are very vital to understanding the whole patient, and also then in the first year, the laws of esoteric healing are studied, and then it's not until the end of the second year that the techniques are even looked at.
Exactly, exactly.
So it is towards the end of the course, yes.
So it's the fourth book, Reinaldo, and the Treatise of the Seven Rays. Probably you know and probably you study this, but in a way, esoteric psychology and esoteric astrology are very important precursors to the esoteric healing book. So we try to give an expansive understanding of the energies and then get into the esoteric healing work. So maybe the time will come, you know, I'm trying to do some work with the old commentary psychologically and trying to explain some of these things. And even though I've always been interested in the medical field and so forth, but I'm not an esoteric healer per se, more along the psychological line, I do feel that there will come a time when I try to explain the meanings of these words in these advanced processes. You know, the use of sound and the use of conventional methods and the warnings against the six-ray methods, you know, and the seventh-ray methods. They're all fascinating, and I think we need a special forum for that alone.
Just one more question, sir.
Okay, did you get a little bit out of that anyway, Reinaldo?
Oh, yes, thank you very much.
You're welcome, you're welcome.
Maybe could just one more question?
Yes, go ahead, please.
The question is, you say that humanity is nearing the first initiation.
Not all of humanity, but a certain proportion, yes.
Okay, yes. However, well, we can see that the black magicians are destroying the essence of humanity through HARP, transhumanism, MKUltra, monarch control, GMO foods, human sacrifices at thousands per month.
It's happening. But the Christ is returning, the hierarchy is returning, and the hierarchy is stronger than this. So we simply have to work with our soul energy and not feel that these opposing forces are too strong for us to handle. The Christ, the hierarchy, the masters, they know about these things. There's going to be a great confrontation between the mental materialistic magicians and the white magicians in the Aquarian age, but if we train ourselves in the proper way, we will be able really to assist. There's some terrible things going on. I know about these things you talk about and so forth, but our job here is not to fight that directly, but to make ourselves so spiritually magnetic that we draw the energy away from that kind of approach.
Okay, thank you very much, sir.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Okay, Rose, I have you here. Hold on, let me there you go.
Michael,
okay.
Before you go to Rose, please unmute me.
Oh, absolutely. Unmute you.
It's Malia. Remute me is what I mean.
Oh, Malia, can't you, just for everybody, do you see a little green box up there in a long vertical row of buttons? That is your mute. There's a self-mute there, and if you mute yourself, no one will hear you. Okay? So look for your little green button, but Malia, I will mute you, okay? But never, anyway, you can accomplish the same effect by yourself. All right. Okay, Rose, go ahead, please.
Hi, hope you can hear me well. I'm currently driving down the interstate.
Oh, are you driving? Okay, well, you're a person in motion. All right, go ahead.
Nice to hear you too, Malia. It has been a while. I want a further clarification on, you know, we hear so much about we are the soul, and then there's like this solar angel that's like not really us, but now it is us, but at the first initiation it takes off and does its own thing. So, you know, it's a little bit of a...
What are we? What are we anyway?
My understanding, there's like our consciousness has been infused somehow by the qualities of this, what we call a solar angel.
Yes.
And so now we have that there are these two threads, right? The sutramatma, which is like the life thread. Now that connects to the monad, if I'm not mistaken. And then there's the consciousness thread. And currently our consciousness thread just reaches up to the soul, and the part of that is building the afterprana.
And beyond, and beyond.
To the monad, et cetera, and beyond. So,
what is the question,
what
actually?
Are we?
What are we really? Okay. What are we? What are we? Yeah. Look, you know, I think I know where you're going with this, and I just want to say that we are essential, irreducible spirit, which is the essence of the monad. We are no vehicle whatsoever. And we are only the monad forever, which is not the monadic vehicle. So, when I say I am the spiritual triad, I am the monadic essence, the essential being within that field of matter we call triadal. Now, when I say I am the soul, I am not the soul. I am the monad within a vehicle called the egoic lotus, and that consciousness and being of the monad is much reduced within the egoic lotus. And while I'm there, I say I am the soul, but really what I should be saying is I am the monad as the soul, or limited by the soul body. When we get down to the personality, am I the personality? No. I am the monad, which is the being and consciousness of my essence within the personality vehicles, and my consciousness again is much more limited by those personality vehicles. I am always and only the monad. Now, the solar angel was a human being in the previous solar system and has since been to the star Sirius for solar angelic training. It has, in a way, a different monad than the human monad. And yet the solar angel knows how to insert its quality surrounding the being and consciousness of the human monad, which has descended from this high point into the egoic lotus. The solar angel creates the egoic lotus as a vehicle for the human monad and pervades it with its quality and nurtures and improves the quality of the human being at a much faster rate than would be possible if the solar angel were not there. We are not the solar angel, and yet from a certain perspective, we are. Having pervaded the entire universe with a fragment of myself, I remain. That's what the solar angel says, as it stands outside the causal body and yet inserts an aspect of its consciousness within the causal body and is thus present to our consciousness within the causal body. When the solar angel goes back to the heart of the sun, when it goes back to the heart of the sun, we have developed sufficient qualities to rise to the feet of the solar angel. Okay, now I'm having a little trouble hearing, so go ahead. Go ahead.
What is the sense of I-ness that we have? We have this sense of consciousness.
We have that even as a monad. We have that even as a monad. Even as a monad, we know we are the one and the many simultaneously. But what happens is the solar angelic energy, which is suffusing the causal body, causes the animal awareness to reflect back upon itself so that the sense of center is produced. This quality of I-ness is a particular reflexive energy within the causal body which brings the outgoing animal consciousness back to a center which we begin to notice and identify with. So I-ness is just a reflex toward a center. And that center is our monadic self and its consciousness within the causal body. So what happens is the solar angel turns its energy, turns our outgoing consciousness around until we become aware of a center. We have forgotten all this because of our descent as the jiva. You ask actually a fundamental question, a difficult question, but I think what can happen here is just think of ourselves as the monad who is descending into various states of confinement. And in the low state of animal consciousness, the monad does not know at that level that it exists. When the solar angel comes into the picture, the solar angel makes it possible for the outgoing animal consciousness to rediscover the monadic center in the center of the causal body, and from that time on, we are individualized. I think that's the best I can do with the question at the moment. It's a complicated one. I hope a little bit got through. Just remember, no matter whether we're personality, soul, triad, we are the monad in those fields of expression and those fields of matter. Nothing but the monad, and there is nothing but the monad, and there's only one monad in the entire cosmos system, and we are it in various states of emanation. Okay?
And then a question for another day would be, why the descent, the purpose? But
why did it happen at all? Why is this going on? It's kind of hard to hear
exactly.
A little bit. But anyway, in terms of the why, the whole thing is redemptive. You know, the monad is ruled by Pisces and Virgo. And these are two signs of material redemption. And the reason for the descent of the monad, even while it stays at home, it goes down, so it kind of bilocates. The reason for the descent of the monad is to lift the lower lives more rapidly into the light. And those lower lives are ourselves as well. So the whole drama is taking place within the one self, and it's between all the various parts of the one self. But, you know, another question for another day. You asked some tough ones, but that's what I can do at the moment, hearing you as I can at the moment. Okay, thanks, Rose.
Thank you.
All right, friends. Who has something they want to put forward, something they would like to discuss? Anybody? And by the way, Andrew, I want to welcome you. It's so good to see you again, and I sure hope things are going along for you. I have missed you while you've been away. So welcome to you, Andrew, and hope you can attend these things. And we're thinking of you all the time and hoping, you know, the situation improves for you, thinking of you with gratitude and with love and with comradeship. So welcome to this.
Thank you very much. It's wonderful to be back.
It's great to hear your voice again, and so all the best. All the best to you.
It's wonderful
that you can be back again.
I'm going through.
Yeah.
I really appreciate all your support and everyone. Thank you.
We're with you, and we like to see you right back in the school as soon as possible. You know, for those of you who are astrologers, and Andrew, you are, you know, when you get Saturn in Scorpio in certain positions, it's quite a test. So, you know, Saturn in Scorpio, I think the whole world goes through it when Saturn is in Scorpio. I really do. And for those who already have that position or a strong Scorpio, then it's an additional factor. All right, we'll be talking, Andrew. We'll be talking. All the best to you.
Okay, thank you.
You bet. Okay, friends, anybody who would like to, you know, don't be shy. Any question is fair game. So, okay, Victor, I see you here, and welcome, Victor. Hi.
Hi there.
Hi.
I have a question. Since you were talking about the monad, you know, we know the soul well. I know my soul ray. At least I hypothesize that I know it. When we talk about the monadic ray, if there's one monad, would we all be the same monad ray?
Well, that's an interesting question. When I say there's one monad, I mean there's one being in all of cosmos. And it undertakes different types of emanations. Let me turn to a chart, which may give a little bit of the idea. This chart is called Cosmic Parabrahm. And you kind of see how the one differentiates into many, many different septenates. There might be other numbers as well, but you know, the sevens are what we've got here. So I'm not saying that the one being of all cosmos, who is the, I call this being the universal logos, okay? I'm not saying that that being has a ray, because in a way that being is far above all the rays. But when it begins to qualify into the seven different streams of the spectrum, the seven colors, the seven notes, then it begins to take on a quality or a ray. And all these different little extensions, each one of them can be extended into sevenness, and on and on and on. And each one of them has a particular quality of energy that we call a ray. Now, you know, for practical purposes, really, all we need to know is our soul ray and our personality ray. You know, in other words, our monadic ray is the X factor, if you will. So we really don't know what that is, and it may take us until the third initiation before we find out for sure. In his book, Discipleship in the New Age, Master D.K. told a couple of people their monadic rays. There was one first ray monad. There was another, a second ray monad person. She had a sixth ray soul and a second ray monad. This other person had a seventh ray soul and a first ray monad. He told that to them for a specific purpose. But it was not that that they had to concentrate upon. What they had to concentrate upon was giving the gift of their soul ray and making sure that the personality ray was a sub-ray of it. Now, I'll tell you what, this is maybe my moment to talk about the Tara test. My colleague Rick Good and I have created an extensive test. We call it a test, it's not really a test, it's a questionnaire. It's called the Tara, T-A-R-A. It's called Transpersonal Astro-Rheological Analysis. It focuses more on the rays. And it is a an inventory which you can take. What I'm going to do is send all of you a letter about this Tara. And it's a process, it's a really a meditative process. It could take you a couple of weeks or 3 weeks, you know, working every day a certain amount. And it will focus not only on your personality, mind, emotions, body rays, but it will focus also on the sub-ray of the soul. It will focus on the rays of the spiritual triad, which in one case is always the same as the soul. And even, at least for speculation and imagination, it will focus on the two monadic rays, the major ray, which is one of the three, and the one of the seven subsidiary monadic rays. It will ask questions that may help you get a keener idea about what may be your monadic ray. Now, on your monadic ray, after the sixth initiation, you are outward bound. If you don't stay on the planet and help the Lord of the world, and only a few of them do, you're headed out on one of the ways of higher evolution, and you preserve your monadic ray while you do this. You may be taking the path to Sirius, you may be taking the ray path, you may be taking the path of magnetic work, you may be taking the path of the planetary logoi or solar logoi or the path of absolute sonship. These are paths which you know, you can study about later, and they're very high things, but the point is, you preserve your particular monadic ray because you keep that monadic ray for a very, very long time, and it is your ray. Now, the day may come when you become a solar angel, and the solar angels blend together in groups to form a planetary logos, and that planetary logos may have a ray different from the ray of your monad. But that doesn't make any difference, because in a way, you become, with all the other solar angels, you become that planetary logos, and all the subsidiary rays are sub-rays. The practical thing at the moment is to make sure you know your soul ray, you know what is the contest between your soul ray and your personality ray, you figure out how to use your personality ray as an instrument of your soul ray, and you just make your contribution in service to humanity along the line of your soul ray, which is your ray of contribution, I like to call it. And as far as the big question is, does everybody have the same ray? Well, everybody has the same essential being. We're all one being, and we have to realize that, however many lives it takes, like the rising sun dawning upon that realization, we have to realize that we are all one being. And then we're beyond the question of rays and so forth. When we start to descend into manifestation, then the seven qualities of deity, which are the seven rays, become important. Are you okay on that, Victor?
Yes. I'm
okay, look, you know, as I say, this will be sent out to you as a link, and you can review what I've said and, you know, come back to another session, and we can take it further. But how do we find our monadic ray? Okay, well, I suggest taking the tarot test for the initial approach. But many of us are uncertain about our soul ray, and we reverse our soul and personality ray. So many people that applied to the Tibetan in the early days, they had it backwards. They had their soul ray being their personality ray being their soul ray. We have to make sure that we know what master we're working for. Well, in a way, we're all working for Master DK, because he's included in his ashram many for training who are on all the different rays. But one day we will move towards that particular ashram to which we really belong, and then it will become very clear what our soul ray may be. Meanwhile, we have a pretty good idea. If you're really attracted to DK's work and you stick with it, you know, probably the ray is either ray 2 or ray 1. That was the great majority of people in his group. And if you have a Ray 1 soul and you stick with Master DK, the great probability is you have a Ray 2 monad. So the second ray is prominent somewhere. Okay, Victor. Right. These are important questions, you know, far-ranging questions. And look, it takes a long time, really. Time is illusory, but it takes a long time. How do we know anything? We have to have our own experience of these things, and we have to struggle on this particular planet of purifying pain. What's it? Purifying sorrow and releasing pain, or the other way around, purifying pain and releasing sorrow. And we have a lot of work to do on our particular planet because it has inherited a difficult situation from the previous solar system. So we're pulled on our planet between the pairs of opposites, soul and personality. We have to struggle, but our struggle will give us true knowledge, and we have to have real persistence. When the personality says, oh, I'd rather rest, I'd rather relax, I'd rather not do this, I'd rather not study, I'd rather not meditate, we have to, from our inner space, say no to those voices and persist without let up until we win the day. I hope we all do that, frankly. I'm talking to myself as I'm talking to you. All right, who else would like to ask? Okay, we have Natasha. Hey, okay, Natasha. Good, very good. Hi, Natasha.
Yes, good evening. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. I hope I can understand. I will do my best, or my colleagues will help me understand. Okay, go ahead.
Okay, I have one question regarding Monad's ray. When and how this ray influence on us as a personality or as a soul or however it is. Can you explain this?
Okay, are you, because I wasn't sure that I heard the entire question. Are you finished with the question? Because then I may...
I can just a little explain, for example, when you are not as a personality build up, the ray of the soul has very little influence, is it?
It has to emerge.
And further,
it has, yeah.
And further, when what kind of conscious we need to have that the monad ray influence on personality?
Okay. I think I can answer that a little bit. Okay, well,
okay.
Obviously the sense of unity, there are seven ways that people achieve the sense of unity, and that is done on the soul ray. The personality has a separative consciousness, and it's under the veil of illusion. Everything is fragmented, nothing is whole. So unity consciousness is soul consciousness, And we have to reach that point where we can begin to see the interrelations between all things, seven modes of interrelation. Now, monadic consciousness or awareness is a different thing. It includes the unity consciousness of the soul, but it converges on what I would call oneness consciousness. In other words, the soul sees the seven different colors or notes, you might say, and the monad sees one essential being in all things. There is a factor in DK's teaching called isolated unity, and it is perfected by the time we reach the fifth initiation, and it begins to be meaningful, perhaps around the third initiation. We isolate the one in all of the many. That's what the monad does. And we cannot be at all sure of what that ray is until we know we have taken the third initiation. So it is effective from the time of the taking the first degree of the birth of the Christ in the heart. It affects the soul level, but we don't detect it in the personality. So the monad is active. It is active in our etheric body. It is active in our astral body for various reasons which I can explain. It is active on the plane of the lower mind because the monadic ray particularly affects the way the lower mind thinks. It is active in our vehicles, but it is the eyes of the master that can see it, and for us it remains somewhat unconscious until we are beginning to converge upon the third initiation. For practical purposes, we don't really need it at this point. I mean, the majority of monads in our solar system are on the second ray. There are some leftovers from the previous solar system on the third ray, and very few on the first ray. But those are the three great rays. There is, here's if I can put it like this, I'll go to another chart. And I will say, if you look at this chart, you will see on the monadic plane, there are seven triangles. Mm-hmm. On the logoic plane, there are three triangles. Mm-hmm. The monadic rays are twofold. They are our very essence. There are seven qualities, and we can be any one of these seven in a subsidiary sense. And one day, when alchemy is perfected within us, we will be released from the monadic vehicle, and we will find our place in one of these three, red, blue, or green, the first three rays, and these are the three persons of the logoic trinity. And that's where our real identity will be made clear to us before we go on farther on the way of higher evolution. So it's not something to worry about too much. As I was saying to Victor, the main thing is to learn how to express the soul ray, how to become a truly integrated being using the soul formulas, how to use the technique of fusion, and there are three techniques to make sure that the soul infuses the personality, and then to express the love wisdom of the soul in seven different ways in service. This is our job, and it could take quite a few lives to make sure we can do that. The monad comes later, as interesting as it is. I've written quite a bit about it. I've got a book called On the Monad, and you can find that in the Makara website, makara.us, and the tarot test will also help.
Okay. Very nice.
Yeah. Okay, Natasha. Thank you. By the way, can I check in with Brett and with Kay? How are you doing in terms of hearing? Can you hear pretty well? Brett, Kay, and Sam, how are you doing? Can you hear?
I can hear.
Very good. I hear you well. So it may be my own hearing problem or my own problem here with the internet, but you can hear the people speaking pretty well, can you?
Yes.
Okay, well, okay.
There is a little
break. Sometimes they're a bit faint, Natasha.
I may have to question you if I miss some words, okay? So you be my ears if possible. Thank you and welcome, Sam. Glad to see you here. All right. Now we have, what I want to do is make sure I give everybody a chance. Some of you are more verbal than others, okay? But that's fine. I just want to make sure that everybody who would like to offer a thought or has a question, whatever it may be, you know, it's a little risky to say whatever it may be, but at least we can make an attempt. So is there anybody who has not spoken yet who would like to speak or ask a question or offer a comment? And that can be also any one of our staff who is assisting us, Sam, Kay, and Brett. You are welcome as well. Because, you know, if you don't ask anything, it will force me to talk, which I never have any problem doing. Okay, Monica, hold on. I have you unmuted. Okay. Hi, Monica, and welcome.
Yes, I'm Michael. Can you hear me?
I can hear you quite well, actually. Maybe because your Germany is close to Finland.
Okay. You spoke in the beginning of a glamorous perception. And it came to my mind, we have quite a trend of so-called reincarnation therapies. You will have heard of this.
Yes.
Which means that personalities are led back to experience a former life.
Yes.
What do you think of this? Because in my opinion, the experience or the knowledge of former lives is a knowledge of the soul or the higher self. Mm-hmm. And I think it can't be possible for a person how vivid such an experience ever may be that really touch it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What do you think?
I think if it's well done, and there are approved techniques of doing this that will be in the new schools, because in the new schools, which may appear over the next centuries, we're going to be taught how to retrieve certain of our significant past lives. If it's well done, it can be helpful. As long as the person is detached. See, somewhere around the second initiation, where Pluto is strong, where Scorpio is strong, and the factor of memory is awakened, this retrieval of past experiences of the soul in a personality can be useful, because then you begin to see more about your character, how it was formed, and how to balance it and correct it. So it can be useful in the integration process, in the fusion process, in the initiation process. As long as it does not fall into the realm of imagination and wishful thinking. Because it's possible.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Yeah? You know what I mean?
Yes, exactly.
It's possible to retrieve experiences which belong to someone else, which are simply imagined. Sometimes dreams will give the hint. DK says you have to be careful about the retrieval of your dreams, because sometimes they show past lives and traumas and crises. A certain amount of detachment is really necessary if you're going to go into this field. And then you have to have the intuition active to know what is imagination, what is fabrication, and what is the real thing, to avoid wishful thinking and the psychological complexes that can go along with retrieving past lives. Ego inflation or ego submission, all those things can happen. So under the approved techniques, and have those techniques been worked out perfectly yet? I would doubt it. But I have some friends who are into reincarnational therapy, into hypnotism in that way, and they've had some success with marking real experiences which are corroborated by proof. So I would say yes, it can be useful, as long as we don't forget that we are not those personalities whatsoever. We are the experiencing consciousness, and more than that, we are pure being. We are that which underlies all of this show that we're seeing, as long as we don't identify too much with those personalities. It can be helpful.
Yes. thank you. May I put another question?
Yes, go ahead.
A friend of mine is an alternative practitioner. And she's of the opinion that she could influence the egoic lotus by homeopathic medicine of a very, very high delusion in cases of very karmic instances in the life of a person. to repair this?
Well, you know, it's a very big reach. It's a very big reach here. I think what you can do is influence the etheric body in such a way that the streams of soul energy have a better opportunity of affecting that etheric body. Because basically homeopathy is all about etheric work. In terms of reaching the higher mental plane, I don't know how we could corroborate whether she's really doing that or not. If there appears to be more soul energy as a result of homeopathic treatment, it may simply be that the instrument is made more receptive. Because, can this really work on those very, very, very subtle levels? Even if the soul appears to be more influential, it doesn't mean that the egoic lotus is being affected, because that's the work of the solar angels. The solar angels take experience and they transmute it alchemically into the substance of the egoic petals. That's a very high type of mathematics that's involved in that, and very vast experience. I think it's a bit of an overreach, but on the other hand, it doesn't mean that homeopathic treatment cannot make the soul more accessible. That I think it might be able to do.
Yes, thank you.
Yep, we just have to test it out. Test everything. Aquarius is going to be a fifth ray age. It brings in a lot of fifth ray, and the personality of humanity will be on the fifth ray, and its mind on the intuitive fourth ray, and we'll be able to submit to scientific proof some of these questions. We have 2,000 years to do it, so we'll find out a few things. Okay, Monica, nice to hear from you, and regards to Germany. Okay, friends. So, Victor, I see your hand up again, but I would like to call upon people who have not had a chance to say anything, but I'll leave your hand up there if it's correct, unless maybe you just didn't take it down. And I will come back to you if there's no one else that would like to speak. Be brave, folks. Be brave. Remember, we are inquiring the way, and no question is out of bounds. We can always relate things to our study somehow. Anybody? Okay. Walter, very good. There you are, and welcome, Walter. Hi.
Hello there.
Hello.
Do you have any thoughts about what is special about the year 2025 and the era of the forerunner that we're in now, and what can we do individually and as a group leading up to that time?
Well, 2025 is the end of the year of the forerunner, which began in 1965. And this is sort of the John the Baptist process, heralding the way for the return of the hierarchy and the Christ. In 1966, we are told that the Christ assumed the vestures of the Buddha. The Buddha had left his triadal vehicles in a state of what? Suspended animation or something? So for the future use of the Maitreya Buddha, who was the Christ, so he could adopt those and use in the lower five worlds the wisdom and accumulation in those higher realms that the Buddha had achieved. So the year of the forerunner began approximately at that time, and it's a huge second ray, what DK calls spiritual propaganda effort. Every 100 years there is the centennial conclave of the hierarchy, 1925, 1825, very important one. Now 2025 coming. I suppose arbitrarily or for deeper reasons they have decided that this is when they will meet. This is the time, we are told, when the first plans for the externalization of the hierarchy will in all probability be laid. So the beginning of the real externalization process will begin in 2025, and also, interestingly enough, the Tibetan will be beginning his third installment of teaching, and he did mention astrology specifically right around the year 2025. I would say 2025 and after. So what can we do? We can train ourselves very, very well during the remaining years of the era of the forerunner, approximately 12 years, one Jupiter cycle. We can radiate the quality of the ageless wisdom to all who may be able to receive it. We can represent the spiritual hierarchy to humanity as best we possibly can. We can become living examples of the teaching. And we must somehow bring the vision to humanity in such a way that it can change, or many people anyway, can change from limited, glamorous, separative notions into the inclusive love wisdom of the ageless wisdom. We have to get it across. We have to reach people. We have to use the third ray and the second ray together to render these things vocal and show how the ageless wisdom can be practical in the lives of everybody. And we need to use the great invocation, spread it wisely, because it's our most effective tool for the reappearance of the Christ. As far as when that reappearance is to be, we cannot say right away. There's so many things that have to be done first. I turn to a page in externalization of the hierarchy, and I may have done this before, but there's something like the word externalization. Wait a second. I want to show you something that shows you it's going to take a little while before the Christ can return. Wave. There's the word wave, and I hope that this will lead me to what I want. Yes, here it comes. And it's right on page 698 and 698, 699. So this is the important thing about the reappearance, and believe me, for all of us, there's nothing more important than we can possibly give our mind and our heart to than the reappearance. When the task of preparation of men's minds is further advanced, when the knowledge of the existence of the masters and their hierarchical endeavor and of the united hierarchy of our planet are a commonly recognized truth, you see our responsibility here, are a commonly recognized truth, and when active goodwill is recognized as a real national asset in all lands, then the speed of the externalization of the hierarchy will be greatly increased. Then the five spiritual centers will begin to take definite form and will call also for recognition. You know, we're talking about New York, London, Geneva, Darjeeling, Tokyo. The five spiritual centers will begin to take definite form and will call also for recognition. The groups they're working will be known, and they will also be in close touch with each other. From that time on, the network of initiates and disciples under the direction of the masters will be worldwide. And in every field of human expression, the opinion of these men and women and of the masters presiding at the five centers and in their affiliated groups will be regarded as of immense value by all governmental, economic, and social organizations. That's quite a preparation, isn't it, so far, Walter? Then, under a great wave of spiritual inspiration, the divine spirit of expectancy for the reappearance of the Christ will sweep through the whole world. It will then be regarded as creditable, and his coming will provide the germ for all world hope. The reason for this will be that the most respected, enlightened, and cultured people on the planet will be looking for him, and then, my brothers, he will come, bringing new energies of love and compassion and implementing the spirit of fresh enlightenment. To these important events must be added the new revelation for which all men wait and to which they will be able to respond owing to the needed and new stimulation. So those two paragraphs, Walter, are the ones which I think are the most illuminating on the timing of the reappearance of the Christ. And obviously, we have to spread that book far and wide, let people join the expectation of the hierarchy and the Christ, and give them good reasons for doing so, reasons that the mind can appreciate and not just that the belief can accept. Anything else there, Walter?
Thank you very much.
Okay. Well, you know, those two pages, externalization of the hierarchy, I'm putting them in yellow this time. I can't change the text, but I can put it in yellow so I can always get back there. I love those two paragraphs because they really put the whole thing in proportion, and they give us a sense of what we have to do. We're part of a great spiritual propaganda effort. We are propagating certain ideas and thoughts, and we are helping them sink more deeply into the consciousness of humanity in a reasonable way. That's our job. We are educators, you know. Every member of the hierarchy, no matter what his ray, is an educator of a kind, and we are trying to let people know that the hierarchy is real. It's just like Master Moria said. He said, "Must I shout it in your ears, hierarchy?" I love that. It's in the book Hierarchy, and it's just it always thrills me, and I get excited too when I read about this. I just think we're all part of a magnificent process. If we can just get a hold of ourselves, correct our faults, we make a mistake, correct those mistakes, and just move on. Don't get hung up with our eyes too much upon ourselves. You know, what is it said? Forget the good self and the bad self, and let only Christ be seen, as it is said. Okay, Walter. Right. Now, are there any people that have not spoken yet that would like to speak? Anybody? I'd like to call you out of hiding so you can say something or ask something. You know, look, we all have different rays, but we're after the great light. We're after the illumination. We're after knowing more about reality, what's really happening here, and spreading the word to other people about what is really happening. Well, okay, Carol, I haven't heard from you yet, and your hand is up. And Carol, hi.
Good morning. This is very brave of me.
It is.
A question about the head in the heart and the heart in the head. How do we know when the heart in the head has become activated, and what's the difference between the two?
Okay, I think it relates to the realm of the spiritual triad. As a matter of fact, in a way, it even relates to the monad. The heart center between the shoulder blades can involve the love petals of the egoic lotus, and can also, here, let me go to a map here somewhere, and can also bring registration of the intuition and Buddhic plane. But definitely, when the intuition is really working and pure reason, or that sense of how things are in an immediate intuitive sense and the relationship between things, when that becomes part of our consciousness, it's as if the heart in the head is really working. And the final connection of that heart in the head center, which is the major lotus within the head center, and has kind of a Neptune, a Vulcan and a Neptune kind of meaning, it connects directly to the monad. And the sense of the union of pure love and being begins to come into our consciousness, and we are really appreciating the oneness of all things. That's what the heart in the head is going to reveal. It's going to connect with the higher planes. The heart center itself also can connect with the Buddhic plane and with the emotional plane, and especially with the egoic lotus. But a still higher type of unitive realization will begin to dawn on our consciousness, and the sense of love and oneness and inclusiveness will begin to dawn when this particular organ is being activated. And of course, it's 12-fold. Very interesting. Remember in the healing formula that I was reading there to Rinaldo, which was the second ray healing formula, the one within the head, the 12 within the head, is the heart in the head, and it is involved in the descent of soul energy and monadic energy to create a field of love within the personality. So I know, you know, it's a little bit vague what I'm saying, but we can do alignments which involve the heart and the head, the love petals of the egoic lotus, the Buddhic plane. As a matter of fact, if we were to turn to the fusion formulas in Esoteric Psychology, Volume 2, somewhere in there around the 390s, there would be some alignments along the second ray which would include the heart in the head center. Suffice it to say, a very pure form of love wisdom is going to be coming out when that center is activated. I suppose that's the best I can do for the moment. Do you have any further question on it?
Is that to do with initiation then?
So, well, different centers for different initiations, okay? First initiation, sacral center, sacral to throat. second initiation, solar plexus, to the heart's center. Third initiation, the throat center and the ajna center are involved. Fourth initiation, the heart center. Fifth initiation, the base of the spine. And now, when you're talking about that full flowering of the thousand-petal lotus, let's not any one of us think that we're going to have the full unfoldment of the heart and the head until we become a master.
Phew. Thank you. That's a relief.
Okay, you don't have to worry about it, but there are alignments. You know, like sometimes when you do your alignments, you know, when you think about your heart center, you can take it up through the ajna center, through the heart and the head, and go straight to the egoic lotus and the jewel in the lotus imaginatively. And the soul energy, which is 12-fold, can begin to descend through that higher center and down to the heart and ajna and so forth. So it you can work imaginatively on that. The idea is just to have the wider impersonal love. This is the most impersonal type of love from that heart and in the head center. Okay, Carol. And welcome from Australia, I guess. Must be early in the morning.
Yes, it is. Thank you, Michael.
You bet. Nice to hear from you. Okay. So now, anybody who has not yet spoken who would like to speak, we have a little bit more time. Anybody who has not yet spoken, you can be brave, you know. I try to evoke you if I possibly can. Okay, well, I'll tell you what, let me call on Victor again. Go ahead, Victor, your thought. Were you wishing to speak, Victor? Just unmute yourself. You are muted. You have self-muted. Press the green button. There you go.
Okay.
You go.
My question is soul expression in mental, astral, or etheric body. I saw where DK was speaking to different disciples, and he would say that your soul is expressing itself through the etheric body in one disciple, and then another goes through the astral body.
Correct.
Specifically, why is the soul expressing through one specific body rather than randomly going through different?
Well, in a way, a soul-infused personality, the soul expresses through everything, okay? That's a generality. However, there is a specific vehicle whose vibration is higher than another vehicle. So if a soul has a choice of vehicles through which to express, DK tells us that if the vibratory level of a particular vehicle is higher than another, the soul will choose that vehicle, and the personality will choose one of the two lesser vehicles. The soul is looking for a type of vibration which will be resonant with it. And so if, let's say, there was a mind that had, fourth subplane matter in a polarized condition, quite vibrant, but the astral body had fifth subplane matter, the soul would not choose the astral body because the mental vibration would be higher. It would work that way. Now, sometimes there's a ray thing that happens there. A lot of first-ray souls, they seem to express through seventh-ray physical bodies, so there can be ray resonance. A soft-line personality through soft-line vehicles, a hard-line personality through hard-line vehicles, but it is not always so. The soul has its own good reasons for doing this. We don't know what that is. In other words, the solar angel engineers this in the attempt to accomplish certain building process which it foresees because of its relative omniscience. So what we have to do is consult the way we react astrally, mentally, and physically. Always one body is left without the pressure of the personality or the soul. Like in my own case, I think I have a soul working through my mind and a personality working through my astral body, and that leaves the physical body pretty much to itself, for better or for worse. And maybe you've been, you know, Eva has been giving some seminars on this, and we discussed this at the University of the Seven Rays pre-conference. We have some material on it, and we can send that to you, where DK talks to all the disciples about which way their soul and personality are working, through what vehicle, and to a certain extent, why. and what is to be accomplished through it. But see if you can get the feel of how, of through which vehicle your soul prefers to work, and through which vehicle your personality, with its sometimes separative action, seems to work. And then you'll have kind of a setup, a kind of an understanding of the way it goes. We don't have the master's confirmation, but at least we have a good working hypothesis. And if we raise the quality of the vehicle, the highest quality vibrationally of the vehicle will be the one that the soul chooses. That's what DK has said at a certain point. Okay?
Okay.
Something like that?
Something like that. Okay.
But what you have to do is examine yourself. How does it work, you know? I mean, you know, where are your separative reactions coming, and where are your most inclusive and unitive reactions coming? Do you have a critical separative mind or an inclusive mind? Does your astral body express love, or does it express the kind of separative emotions? You see, the personality tends to be separative, so look for a lower quality of expression through the vehicle through which the personality expresses, although eventually, of course, it will be a sub-ray of the soul ray, and then things will begin to fuse together. And in another sense, the entire soul-infused personality will have the soul expressing through everything, though one of the vehicles may be its particular target in this particular life for purposes which it understands, seeing several of your past lives, seeing several of your future lives. The solar angel can see this.
Yes,
anyway,
appreciate it.
Inquire the way. Okay, very good, Victor. Okay, let's see. I just want to make sure. Okay, and Rose, let's see, is there anybody else that has not spoken? Rose, yes, go ahead. Yes. Wait a second. Now, hold on. I'm not able to unmute you. Oh, there you go. Okay. Proceed, please.
Can you give a little bit of brief clarification on the difference between rounds, chains, globes,
yeah,
and all
okay.
of that? I know it's all...
Oh, it's a big subject, but let's put it like this. Planetary schemes, well, now I better turn to some maps here. And I'll try to make this really essentialized because it's a huge subject, all right? These are seven planetary schemes, as we see a map here in our solar system. Saturn and its schemes and the Saturn scheme and the other scheme surrounding it, then the Neptune and Uranus scheme. They are all chakras, okay? I can differentiate. The planetary schemes are large chakras within the system, the etheric and astral and other systems of the solar logos. They are solar logoic chakras. The chains are chakras within the planetary scheme. So they are the seven centers of each chain. And here we have maybe a little better picture of that prepared here by Tuya. Has a good one here. Here it is. Here is the whole planetary scheme, the big circle. It's a chakra within the solar logos. It's a wheel of force of certain ray potency and representing a certain chakra. For instance, our Earth will be representing the base of the spine chakra in the solar logos. The chains themselves are chakras within the scheme, and the globes are chakras within the chain. Okay, so they all have the function of four centers. Now, rounds are periods of activation. So there is a sequence in which different chakras are activated at different times of the development and unfoldment of the being we are dealing with. We know that not all of our chakras in our etheric body, use the etheric body as an example, are activated at once. The lower chakras are activated first, and then slowly in a certain sequence depending on the monadic ray. So we can't really know that geometry, but different ones of our chakras are activated at different times. Now, when a complete circle is made of all activations at a certain level, you have what's called a round within the planetary chain. all the different globes have been touched. In what order, I can't say. It's not just 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. There's something more to it, okay? Just like there's something more to it here, it just doesn't go like this with us. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. There's a whole geometry of activation and a sequence of activation, depending on our monadic ray. But when one complete circle of activation has been achieved, that's a round. And then it starts again on the higher turn of the spiral. Now, I just want to say, that's what's called a chain round. And we're on the Earth chain, and here we are down on this little globe right here. And we're in our fourth round of the fourth chain. That's not the same thing as a higher type of round, which means the activation not of globes, but of planetary chains, going through all the seven chains in a certain order at a certain level, and there are seven of those scheme rounds which activate the chains, and seven of the chain rounds which activate the globes. So the difference between the scheme, the chain, and the globe is they are chakras. Rounds are not chakras. They are sequences of activation of the chakras. That's what rounds are. And I think that's probably as simple and direct as I can make it, and the rest takes years. Okay.
Are there multiple Earths in existence in the different globes?
Yes,
or
yes.
Did you say the Earth?
This is the dense physical globe. Dense physical globe. But it's not just dense. It has all of, because it's a globe lord, and so it has all of the different vehicles. So there are multiple focuses, globe focuses for globe lords, and they are lesser beings, chain focuses for chain lords, and there are not 49 of them, there are 7 of them, and they are greater beings, and there is a scheme lord, and he is the greatest of all, and he's part of the chakra system of the solar locus. So there are multiple areas or dimensions within the Earth scheme, multiple focuses, and we call them globes and chains and within the scheme. Now, where are they positioned? This we don't know. They can be, as a matter of fact, superimposed and interpenetrating, and they are separated by electrical polarity. That's what it takes to go from one to another.
Will each of these globes have its own hierarchy?
Is it what? Will each have its own hierarchy?
Will each of these globes have their own?
Yes, 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 and each of the chains do, and the scheme as well. And each of the globes have their own kind of Shambhalic correspondence. So there are Buddhas of activity, let's say. You know, they are Shambhalic beings. There are Buddhas of activity on the globe level. There are higher correspondences of Buddhas of activity on the chain level. And they're finally the greatest of the existences. The highest correspondences of the Buddhas of activity are found on the scheme level. I think if you go to page 873, approximately, right in there, of a treatise on cosmic fire, you will see that each of these areas has its own types of beings. But they're all emanations of the one logos. See, and that's the whole thing. If we understand emanation, we'll understand how we can have many and how we can have one. Go ahead.
So they don't correspond to the planes. These different globes don't correspond to the planes. Like
the denser one
doesn't correspond to the denser plane.
The globes are not homogeneous, as far as I can understand. We can say, is our Earth globe made only of Earth? No, absolutely not. It's the expression of an Earth, of a globe lord, and he has all of the different beings. Now, some globes have lower levels of expression than others. For instance, there are some globes whose lowest vehicle is the etheric. Some globes' lowest vehicle is the astral. Some globes' lowest vehicle may be the mental. But they all have vehicles higher than their lowest globe. It's a big question. I can't go into it too deeply, but I think I've given you what I can at the moment. Okay, friends, we're almost reaching the end here. Yeah, okay. And we're almost reaching the end here. And Rinaldo, you have your hand up for a question. I might just have time for just a little bit more. Go ahead.
Yes, just a question to clarify, because there are some discrepancies among esoteric authors. The simple question is, What are the real esoteric colors of the rays? I say this because several authors, they have discrepancies. What okay. are the definitive ones?
Okay, now I have to. Sam, can you repeat to me what Reinaldo said? Did you hear it?
He sees a discrepancy between different esoteric writers on the colors of the rays.
Ah, okay. Okay. Well, look.
I think that's the gist of it.
Is that we're not yes. in a position. We're not in a position, Reinaldo, to confirm that. In DK's books, he gives an esoteric and exoteric color for the rays, but he also gives sometimes as many as three. And there are different notes for the different rays as well, both esoteric and exoteric. It's a whole fourth ray science which has to be unfolded. I really don't trust anybody on this, and DK is giving us many, many blinds. So the authors differ, and that just shows they don't know. They don't know with certainty. And nor do I say I know with certainty. I know a field of probability around the colors. Like for the first ray, red is esoteric, orange is exoteric. For the second ray, we have indigo blue in general. It is the important one, but light blue is sometimes given as an esoteric color, but it has to do with the previous solar system. When it comes to the third ray, DK gives us green esoteric and black exoteric. Which is explainable. For the fourth ray, yellow is given as the esoteric color and cream color as the exoteric color. But there may also be others. For the fifth ray, we seemingly have three colors. Orange is the customary exoteric color, but sometimes yellow is also added as an exoteric color. You know, mercury is involved with rays 3, 4, and 5, and the color of mercury is yellow. So that's the reason it's a very strong fifth ray indicator. And indigo blue is given as the truly esoteric color of the fifth ray. When it comes to the sixth ray, we have three colors. Red is the crudest, and it's very exoteric, and it relates, however, to the esoteric color of the first ray. Then we come to the possibility of silvery rose, which is more esoteric, and light blue, which is, well, or just plain old blue, which is not indigo, is also connected with the sixth ray. When it comes to the seventh ray, we have violet esoterically and white exoterically. And sometimes they are reversed because white is a kind of synthesis and it's really no color at all. So with the seventh ray, we have white, and for the third ray, we have black, and those are the two extremes. Now, people can say what they want until this is tested. With the combination of the fifth ray and the fourth ray, with frequency analysis, and I think, you know, Germany will be very important in doing this. It has such a strong fourth ray and fifth ray together, fourth ray soul. Until this is tested out in terms of the effects upon people's etheric body, I just don't believe anybody. I mean, I will accept what the Tibetan said and what Blavatsky said as a working hypothesis, and I would not give my full belief to any of these varying systems, because it's just oftentimes what some psychic has conceived of, and there's no good reason behind it. That's the best I can do
on
that.
Thank you very much.
Okay, very
good. Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, friends, I think we're reaching the end here. I like to keep this at about an hour and a half or so. Is there anybody who has not spoken that would like to say anything? You don't have to ask a question. You can just say something if you wish. I want to evoke you if it is at all possible. We are really inquiring the way, aren't we? You know, we're asking questions of ourselves and of others because we're seeking the light that is transmitted via Mercury and then later via Uranus, the higher octave of Mercury. We are seeking the light. So does anybody have any comment you would like to offer, just raise your hand, and I'm very happy to have you say whatever you want to say. Okay, I try to see if you're there. Otherwise, okay, well, I'll tell you what. Look, I'll try to offer these open webinars, okay? In the Moria Federation, we have webinars simply for students, and, you know, and that's fine as far as it goes, right? But I wanted to open the field up to those of you who are not associated with the Moria Federation and possibly give you the chance to be associated with the Moria Federation if you would like. As I say, we do have a very rather non-threatening intake program that we call Preparing for the Great Quest, and there's still going to be another few months, 4 or 5 months of that until we begin at the Capricorn Solstice. You're most welcome to come in and work with a mentor and get used to the works of Alice Bailey. We'd like to have you join that effort if you'd like, and then see if you really want to join the school. But otherwise, every month or so, I don't know how often, I'll try to offer these open webinars so we can discuss whatever's on your mind in terms of the spiritual path and its application. Obviously, we're dealing pretty much with the works of Alice Bailey, a little bit with Agni Yoga, of course, and with the works of H.P. Blavatsky, and somewhat with the works of Master Hilarion, Light on the Path and the Teachings of the Temple, and so forth. Certain masters have written for humanity, and it's those things that we focus on especially. But after all, it's life, isn't it? It's all one big life, and whatever's happening can be related to the esoteric truth, and that's what we want to do. Whatever tradition you're in and whatever question you'd like to ask, we can at least deal with it from the perspective of the Trans-Himalayan Wisdom, which is one of the four great universities, esoteric universities in the world, you know. The Trans-Himalayan Group, the Southern Indian Group, the Chinese group, and the European group that we'll be forming with the Sixth Root Race. So we can deal with it from the point of view of the Trans-Himalayan Wisdom, which for the modern student is, I think, an important source. Okay, friends, well then, excuse me, let's close with this. What we'll do is have the great invocation, and what I'd like you to do is put yourself on self-mute, and where you are, say the invocation with me, but make sure that you are not that your microphone is not on, because then we'll get all of this confusion. And then you can unmute yourself, and we can all say goodbye to each other. Okay. So this is the great invocation, and you know it. It's our most effective instrument in preparing for the reappearance of the Christ and the externalization of the hierarchy. This is what we use, this great mantra of power and light held within the archives of Shambhala for a long time until the Christ agreed to return, actually in physical form, as the Bodhisattva for the Aquarian Age. Then it was released from Shambhala, very important mantra. So, I'll try to use here the note G, which is a blue note, an indigo note from one perspective. And we'll sound an om to begin with, then we'll sound the invocation, and then wherever you are, you know, as long as your mic is not on, we'll sound the three oms together. From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the minds of men. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of men. May Christ return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of men, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the race of men, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. Thank you, friends. I'm unmuting you all, so, you know, you can say farewell if you wish. I'll just let you know when I finish with that. Maybe one of my colleagues can tell me if there's ever a way to unmute everybody all at once. I'd like to know that. I haven't figured it out yet. But we have... I'm doing my best here. And there's just a few more. And then,
I just
want to thank you all for attending, and I'll let you know when the next one occurs. Now you're all unmuted. You see, you got to get a headset, then the echo will stop.
Thank you, Michael.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you very much.
And, okay. Prepare for the Leo.
Thanks and blessings.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.
Bye, Michael.
Bye. Bye. Bye.
Bye, Michael.
All the best. Bye. Bye.
Thank you.
Thank you. Farewell.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Bye. Bye.